enjoys a certain freedom and flexibility in relationship to the bodily organism that is not found in the lower animals. The lower animals are body and sensitive psyche. That's what that is their constitution. The human psyche has a greater flexibility and freedom vis-a-vis that bodily base than is found in the lower animals. It is connected with, tied to, the bodily base. It participates in the rhythms and processes of the body. It does. And to divorce it too sharply from the rhythms and processes of the body is to invite schizophrenic collapse. I'll give you an example of a dream in a moment that indicates that a person is playing with schizophrenic collapse. But nonetheless, there is a certain freedom, a certain flexibility of the psyche, the human psyche, because while it is connected with the bodily base, participates in the rhythms and processes of the body, it is also oriented to participation in the distinctively human search for direction in the movement of life. And if that search is not going forward, the psychic experience is very different from what it is if that experience is going forward with some success. The search for direction for a lower animal is found in terms of stimulus response. That is not the case for a human being. The animal takes its direction from the psyche, which is tied to the body. The human being does not find its direction in that way. The direction in life for a human being is not a matter of programmed psychic response to conscious stimuli that would satisfy bodily needs. Direction, again, I'll say that, the direction in human life is not found through programmed psychic responses to conscious stimuli that would satisfy the needs of the body. Direction in human life is found by intelligence, rationality, deliberation, and religious commitment, performing their distinct operations of question and answer. Direction is found by inquiry, and that inquiry is what I mean by spirit or intentionality. And to understand our psychic experience, we have to introduce this dimension. I cannot understand my affective life solely in terms of the connection of my psyche with my body. I need to introduce the participation of my psyche in the quest for meaning, the truth, for the good, to understand my psychic experience. The psyche then participates both in the rhythms and processes of the body and in the orientations of the human spirit. It feels both of them. As psyche, it feels its participation in the body, it feels its participation in the orientations of the spirit, and that feeling is one of tension. And genuineness, human genuineness, is a matter of negotiating that tension without displacing it in either direction. Negotiating the tension. The psyche will feel that tension between body and spirit because the psyche participates in both of them.
Why is there a tension?
We'll come to that.
That's really the next point, number E, the contrariety of psychic and intentional schemes of recurrence. Or the first thing that I want to do is just to indicate, you see, the participation of the psyche in both of these, okay? And then I would want to indicate that that is felt as a, is a tension, as a tension between the two. Now, the next point, dealing with the tension itself. Possibly best dealt with in terms of some concrete experiential examples. I have a friend in the States, an extremely intense intellectual type of person. Whose relatively consistent psychological tendency is to lose the ground under his feet. In theoretical elaborations that call for practical commitments that become, as he follows them, less and less related to the ground under his feet. A couple of years ago, he told me about a dream in which he is driving alone in a car down a country road at night. It's pitch black, except for the lights that are projected by the car. And as he's driving, he suffers a heart attack. And he manages to pull the car over side of the road and wait for help. And a number of cars go by without offering any assistance, and finally a car stops and they take him to the hospital. It's a long dream. They take him to the hospital, get him into the emergency room, and in the emergency room he begins to realize where he is, but he starts elaborating a theory of religion and politics. His psyche is displaced in the direction of the spirit. It is not adequately encased in the bodily base of the psychic experience. He's inviting schizophrenic inflation. He's playing it on the border of that. He's flirting with it. The dream is a warning that he is in great danger of losing the ground under his feet. In great danger of losing his connection with the body today. He's not sensitive enough to the rhythms and processes of the body. He is so, and he's present in this area. And he really functions very well, theoretically. But the practical consequences of his theoretical capacity are danger. He's always having dreams in which Henry Kissinger and the Pope are appearing. In other words, he is always working out, schemes for the salvation of the totality of human experience. It's always got these major figures. Now, every now and then, if one of them appears, they can be an archetypal. But when you're always in that world, when you're always elaborating the most finely wrought schemes for setting everything right, you are losing ground under your feet. You are not sufficiently based in the limitations that are part of you. And particularly in this case where there is no possibility, you know, that he's ever really going to be negotiating with Henry Kissinger or the Pope. It's all fantastic. Okay. That's inviting a displacement of the psyche in the direction of the spirit. The opposite displacement in the direction of the limitations that are put upon the human person by the body invites depression. There's a continuum of psychic experience, a continuum of psychic tendencies, if you want. And at the extreme ends of the continuum are the depressive possibilities on the one hand and the schizophrenic possibilities on the other. While the schizophrenic is not adequately rooted in the body, the depressive person is too encased. Bodily base. So much so that in certain instances, extreme instances of depression, even physical movement becomes impossible. At that point, of course, you're talking about the extreme ends of the continuum of psychic tendencies. But what is it that leads to depression? And Becker points out very well, most of us, psychically, are about here. We're off-center, and in the direction of depression. Our worlds are too narrow. Our horizons are too narrow. We do not own the possibilities that we, in fact, do have. We bog down in the possibilities that are presented to us by our culture. And as John was indicating before, when you have a culture that discourages creativity, then to buy into the culture's way is to move yourself somewhere in the direction of the depressive end of the psychic spectrum. Your meanings are too narrow, your world is too narrow. The schizophrenic and the person that moves in this direction is in revolt against that narrowness. Revolting against it. Right. The manic depressive oscillates back and forth between the two. Oscillates from one to the other. In the manic stage, not sufficiently rooted in the limitations imposed by bodily existence. In the depressive stage, so bogged down in them that there's no possibility of movement. Oscillation back and forth. Yes?
You're saying that there are, most people are towards depression, should most people reject the other side?
No, most people should, I mean, where we ought to be in the taught balance of limitation and transcendence. This notion, which I'm just introducing here, is the key notion for the remaining lectures of the course. The taught balance of limitation and transcendence is characteristic of the health of the psyche. To live in the balance between the rhythms and processes of the body and the intentionality. Now, ontologically, why is this experienced as a tension? Ontologically, I think it's because, and here I'm introducing my ontology into the thing, the spirit is unrestricted in its potentialities for raising and answering questions. There's an unrestricted desire to know. And left to itself, it will just keep going. It will just keep on raising questions and formulating answers and elaborating theories and so on and so forth. This is a capacity. We are potens theory omnia. Aquinas. We are capable of becoming everything intentionally. Through intentionality, there is that unrestricted quest. The questions keep coming, piling up. One on the other. The unrestricted quest of the human spirit in the limitations that are imposed upon the possibilities of that quest by what the body can stand and take. The regular recurrent rhythms and processes of the body, for instance, needing sleep, needing rest, needing nourishment, refreshment, recreation, and so on and so forth. And to live in that, to find a taut balance between the rhythms and processes of the body, with the limitations that those impose. Limitation here not as a negative word at all, but a positive constituent or characteristic of what it is to be human. So live in that taut balance between those limitations and the unrestricted quest for intelligibility and truth. The unqualified good is what, for me, would constitute the health of the human psyche, the flourishing of the human psyche. Live in the balance. But the ontological root of why I would call it attention is the unrestricted nature of the drive for understanding on the part of the human spirit, and the restricted, limited conditions that are put upon them by the human body. And this, the dream of my friend was indicating that the unrestricted quest of his own intelligence or understanding, you see, had gotten the upper hand to the point where he was somewhere over here on the continuum, that his own theoretical capacities, which are extraordinary, they are, there's no question about that, his own theoretical capacities are, got the upper hand to the point where he is not sufficiently attending to the rhythms and processes of the body, which impose limitations on how much he can do with his mind, how much he can achieve, embrace, and so on. Terry?
An example you gave about schizophrenic was helpful. Could you maybe give an example of someone who was two-in-case?
Yeah, I mean, again, the extreme example is a friend of my family's, again, in the States, where the woman in the family, to take the extreme, has been suffering from depression for years. But every winter, her husband plans a trip with just himself and herself to a warm climate, Florida or Arizona or California. They go to one of the three places. Most years, she is unable to pack the suitcases. That is how restricted her movement is. And it's a psychic depression. When she starts to pack the suitcases, she is overcome by anxiety as to whether or not she's putting in too much or not putting in enough. The restrict nature of what she's able to do with her creativity, you see, it's so restricted she can't pack a suitcase. That anxiety, panic anxiety, overtakes her at that point. He's got to do the whole thing, arrange for the tickets, fight everything else, and he just almost physically carries her on the trip. It's the limitation of creativity. Now, again, that's at the far end when you're talking about somebody who can't pack a suitcase. But depression, psychic depression, is that limitation that's put upon creativity. Whereas the schizophrenic is the overdose of creativity. See? To the point where it starts to become fantasy. You're living in a fantastic world. Does that give some help on that?
Just in terms of the extreme, I guess I'm trying to envision too a little bit in terms of more the normal range.
All right. The normal range would be something like this. We're over time, so I'll do this briefly, and I'll come back to it in more detail in the next class. But the normal kind of thing, the kind of thing that Becker is talking about, for instance, is that your socialization process as a child is already putting upon you cultural expectations and cultural roles that you are expected to adapt to, you see. And those cultural roles are basically a cover-up for the primal terror that we find being alone in existence, you see. And we have to somehow buy into roles which are determined for us by others. And to the extent that we allow our personalities to be determined by the roles that somebody else has determined for us. For instance, with you, Tom, what is it really to be a deacon or a priest? You see, you've got to answer that question. Huh? And you don't just take that all over whole hog, you see, from the tradition. You have to sift the tradition and make your own personal appropriation of it. If you don't make your own personal appropriation of it, you are simply bogging down in an institutional role. You're letting the persona, the mask that you wear, dictate who you are as you perform the function in that role. You go on doing that. At the beginning, it may seem meaningful, but if you do, if you perform your functions as a deacon or a priest that way all your life, the meaning's going to go out of it awfully fast. But if you appropriate the tradition and make it your own, see, and you say, this is what I'm doing as a priest to be, and if you continually elaborate that personal appropriation of it, the meaning of it remains for you. See. But if you bog down simply in what the institution determines, see, then you're limiting your possibilities. I'll do more with that. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.